Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is sponsored by iTalki, a very convenient way to get regular English practice into your life by having one-to-one lessons or conversations on Skype. What happens is you check out iTalki, you look at all the teachers they have available, and when you've chosen the teacher that you like and you get some lessons, iTalki will then send you a voucher worth 100 iTalki credits, which you can use as a discount in the future. To get that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. iTalki is a really great service, and it's like a really cool way to push your fluency and build your confidence by having conversations and lessons from the comfort of your own home. It's a really great idea and you should check it out. And I'd just like to thank iTalki for supporting episodes of this podcast with their sponsorship. Okay, here's a new episode then, and here's the jingle. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello and welcome back to another episode of this podcast for learners of English. On the podcast today, I'm talking to a friend of mine called Fred Iango. English is not Fred's first language, but he has learnt it to a proficient level, enough to complete a master's programme in business management and marketing in English, and to do regular comedy shows in English as well. I've invited Fred onto the podcast because I want to talk to him about how he develops and maintains his English, what life is like in the country that he originally comes from, and we do talk about those things. And Fred says some very interesting points about how he's pushed his English on his own. But also we end up talking about lots of other things like history, geography and cutlery as well. Yes, cutlery. That's knives, forks and spoons. Now, you'll hear that Fred speaks with an accent which is quite difficult to put your finger on. It's hard to identify exactly where he comes from. And I'm not going to tell you right now. I'm not going to tell you exactly where he's from at this moment, because I want you to guess based on his voice. So as you listen, try to guess where he's from. What do you think? Where do you think Fred comes from? You'll see that although it's his second language, Fred's English is precise and accurate in terms of grammar, and he uses a wide range of vocabulary, and to a large extent, that is down to the way that he's applied himself to his acquisition of English. We ended up talking for about an hour and 15 minutes in this conversation, and I've decided to publish it, the whole thing, all of it, in one single episode rather than dividing it into two episodes, because I think it's best enjoyed without interruption as one continuous flowing conversation. Okay, so it's time to begin. And the first thing that you're going to hear us talking about is the First World War, in fact, because Fred's been listening to a podcast called Hardcore History with Dan Carlin, which is an excellent podcast if you're interested in history, Hardcore History. So Fred's been listening to that, and he's been listening to an episode of that podcast about the First World War. That's the first thing we talk about. Okay, so now I will let you listen to our conversation in full, starting with some stuff about the First World War, and then moving on to all sorts of other topics, including language learning, geography, a bit more history, and also a few tangents about films and things, as usual. All right then, that's enough of an introduction. I will now let you listen to the conversation, and here we go. So, hello, Fred. I've started.
Okay.
How are you? I've already asked you how you are.
Yeah.
You just, like, when you came in, I asked you.
Yes.
But now, all of that stuff that didn't happen on the podcast, okay, that doesn't exist.
It's not reality.
That's
this is
right.
Reality.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm good, man. Glad to be in the apartment.
Yes.
Where it happens. Yeah. Very nice.
Welcome onto the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Is this your first podcast, or have you done a podcast before?
No, it's the first one.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. This is a good start. I listen to tons of podcasts constantly. I'm listening to one right now, actually. It's about...
You're actually speaking on one.
Yeah, I'm speaking right on now. One. Well, not listening right now, obviously. I'm talking to you. No, but on my way here, I was listening to one. It's called Hardcore History.
Hardcore History.
Yeah. It's a guy named Dan Carlin. He has like these long stretches of just him talking about a subject for like 20 hours.
Really?
Yeah. In like 6 episodes of like 3 hours each. And this one is about the First World War.
Oh,
it's
really?
Quite interesting. Yeah, yeah.
So what have you learned about the First World War?
So far that it should have been avoided. Yeah, it feels like a lot of people... just didn't do the job well. It was a weird part of history, like a mix between the old ancient world and like the and just on the brink of the new modern world and etc. So it was a very weird moment in history, and just like bad things happened at the bad moment, and you had the bad people in charge because you still had this mix of, you know, new republics like France and then old monarchies like Russia, where, you know, wrong roll of the dice and you have incompetent people.
Right,
the wrong spot,
people who hadn't been chosen, or people who hadn't gone through like a system of quality checking,
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
Just like members of this old dynasty that
exactly.
had been there from the beginning.
And everybody was the cousin of everybody else between England, Russia, and Germany. So it was just family tensions and then incompetent people just born there. So, yeah.
So the whole First World War was just like one of those family arguments.
You had George at that time?
George? It was either Edward or George.
The last George was the guy from the King's Speech.
We had George the Sixth was the king during World War II.
Yeah, exactly.
And
no, I think it was George the Fifth before him, because Edward was the one who abandoned the throne. What's the word for that? Abdicated?
That's right.
Abdicated.
Yeah. Edward the Seventh.
That's a vocabulary for your people.
Very good. No, very good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Edward the Seventh abdicated.
Yeah.
Because of the, you know, Mrs. Simpson
exactly.
thing, because he chose to go off with this divorced Catholic woman.
Exactly.
And then George the
Sixth
became the king, as exactly. we all know from that film, the
King's Speech.
The King's
exactly.
Speech. Yeah. So you think it was George the Fifth?
Yeah, George the Fifth. Since
he
died like for the Second World War, so it should be him.
That's right, Fred. You're exactly
yeah.
right. It was George.
So cousin George and cousin Nicholas and other cousin Wilhelm, or no, what's his name? The German
one. Wilhelm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yeah.
They didn't agree on stuff.
Okay.
And then the war happened.
Were they actually related, those families?
Yeah, because of Victoria. They're all related. Yeah,
really? Because of Victoria?
And then when you look at pictures of George and Nick, they really look alike. They almost look like brothers.
Wow.
It's really weird to think that it was just, 100 years ago, and you had like those families that were all related. And I mean, and it was like that in all of Europe, to be fair.
Mm.
And eventually, it didn't work out.
Right. Well,
inbreeding is not something that usually works out. So
especially at the highest levels of power.
Exactly.
You don't want inbreeding in that situation. It's not necessarily good for the gene pool.
Exactly.
I see. All right. So you're learning about the First World War. Now,
yes.
All right. So you listen to loads of podcasts. This
mm-hmm.
is the first podcast you've ever been on.
Yes.
I don't know if I will have done an introduction, because I do usually do these long, drawn-out introductions, but I'm trying to do that less.
I'm trying to do the
rambling later in the episodes
exactly.
instead of the beginning.
Since I listened to your podcast, I heard about that as well.
Really? Are you
yes.
familiar with that already?
Yes.
Okay. Have you heard many of the episodes?
I heard some, as I told you, some like with other people I know, like Amber and Paul, that have been on the podcast.
So you picked up the general sort of vibe of the podcast
yeah.
then? Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
I'm ready.
You're ready.
Anything.
You're prepared.
Exactly.
Okay, good. So what I normally ask at this point is, my guest is, how do we know each other? So how do we know each other?
So we met on the stand-up comedy scene in Paris. I started after you. So, I mean, when I started doing the shows where you were already on.
Yeah.
I mean, you were there. So, that's how, I mean, it's quite straightforward.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's
when did you first start doing stand-up?
I started in end of March 2014,
right.
I think. Oh, yeah.
Does it coincide with something else that happened in your life?
No, it's just because the event was managed by my place with a website, so I can like, and they have pictures for each event, so I can go and track my first picture and know exactly when.
So the point is, what you're saying, Fred, is that you can't remember without the aid of the internet.
It was the last Monday of March.
Okay, don't worry, no one's gonna check. Like
I know. No, yeah, so no, I just can't remember if it's 15 or it's 14.
Okay.
So anyway,
March, a few years.
Yeah, I think it's going to be my third year.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So yes, we know each other from the stand-up scene here in Paris.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's been since 2014 or 2015, 2 or 3 years. This is going to be your third year, basically. Yeah. Okay. All right. And actually, Fred, I mean, I don't know you very much outside of the world of stand-up.
True.
So. Actually, what I want to do in this episode is talk to you about your English, because that's kind of like the main reason that, you know, we decided to talk on the podcast.
Yeah,
because you've got some things to tell me about, like learning English and stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, I just want to basically kind of get your entire life story.
Okay.
So where are you from?
I'm from Cameroon.
Okay. And so how long have you been in France?
I've been in France for 6 years. I also know the exact date if you want.
Yes, we need exact dates on Luke's English podcast.
The 9th of September 2010.
Okay, you've been here longer than me then.
Oh.
I've been here since roughly the 9th of September 2012.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I arrived in France a couple of years after you.
Ah.
And started doing stand-up here straight away because I was already doing it in London.
That's the difference,
and
yeah.
And so I was already sort of doing it.
It took me more time to start with the stand-up.
Right.
Exactly. But yeah, I came here for my studies.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a business school called HEC Paris.
Okay.
It's out of Paris. It's actually, it's next to Versailles. And so I went there to do a master's degree in management, and I majored in marketing.
Okay. Sounds very prestigious.
It's a good school.
A business school just outside Paris near Versailles. I'm thinking it's a rather good posh place.
Sounds exactly. Like it. You do have 20-year-olds with BMWs, SUVs in the school. Yeah.
Really?
Exactly. Yeah, you do.
Wow. So it's one of those schools.
It's a little more mixed than that. It's not only that. You also have normal people like me. But I'm not dissing on rich people, by the way.
No, rich people are
fine. They don't care. They don't care.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't mind. We can diss them as much as they want. They'll be like, well, I still have a BMW.
Exactly.
You know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words cannot take my BMW away from me.
Exactly.
I think that's how the rhyme goes.
Exactly. Great rhyme. Great rhyme.
That well-known rhyme.
Exactly.
All right. So what, you came here to study... it was what? Business management and marketing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, business, you entered. So, I have 2 years for the master's. So the first year is generic management stuff. And the second year, you have to major. So, you choose a specific subject. Mm-hmm. In my case, it was marketing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, when did you graduate from that master's program?
2014, actually.
Okay, and then immediately, like, how can I use these business skills?
Exactly.
I will try and make groups of people laugh.
Exactly.
So what was the thinking behind that idea then? After graduating with this good qualification in business management and marketing, why choose to do stand-up?
I'm not sure myself. Well, I'm thinking about dates again.
Don't get dragged down into the details.
Okay.
Don't worry about the dates. You may have graduated with qualifications in business marketing, but you don't need to be accountable to numbers and figures here. This is a no number zone. This is Luke's English podcast.
Okay,
so the numbers are not important. Give us qualitative data, not quantitative data.
Okay. No, but I've done things on stage for some time. Let's see. So I've done some dancing, singing, and then during my last year on campus, I did the musical, so the school musical, and I started doing improv comedy. And at the same time, I was discovering American comedy stand-up, basically.
Right.
So these two things kind of intersected, and I started writing a little bit on my own, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do with that, and I wasn't sure what to try or not. And then I discovered that the place, it's called Spoken Word Paris. So it's basically an open mic stage for artists of all types. It's mostly poetry and spoken word and slam.
And then, slam?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's the same as spoken word. So people talking basically without a piece of paper, but have storytellers of some kind of like poetry without reading from a book.
I guess slam poetry or slam is like the it's like a word for performing poetry.
Yeah.
But if you say it's going to be a poetry reading, it sounds a bit kind of boring and dull. Whereas if you say we're going to do slam Friday, that sounds a lot more exciting. Yeah, it's basically poetry, live poetry readings.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a lot more cool than that.
Yeah, it can be a lot more cool than that. They have young people too. but they accept everything. So I went there and I tried stand up for the first time there. It was. I think, as it is with most people trying stand up for the first time, it wasn't good.
And really?
Yeah, it's actually interesting. They give you 5 minutes. You have to have a 5 minute spot. And halfway through my set, a guy started banging at the door because he wanted to come in. He thought it was the toilets. I think it was quite a little scary. But anyway,
what you were like? So anyway. I need the loo, let me in.
Exactly, it was literally that. So
better that than them trying to get out.
Exactly. Oh my god, that would have been maybe a better story. But
hi, my name's Fred. let us out of here.
Exactly. So yeah, I just went there and tried, and then I just started doing it more and more, and I just kept doing it ever since. Right. In a way, yeah. Mm. I just started writing more and trying stuff and trying new places and then meeting people like you as in discovering new places. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Now I see you sometimes at the SoGymnast. That's where I see you most often.
Exactly.
You also run your own show?
Yeah, now I run my own show since October, which is the Comedy Square at the Pan Am Art Cafe. Yeah. Very nice place. Very nice spot.
I still haven't done your show.
Yeah, I know. Any Tuesday, man.
Tuesday. I'll be there soon.
No problem. Don't feel bad about it.
No, I'm not. I know. I don't feel bad about it. Although, except I do in a way feel bad about it because,
schedules are complicated. It's not easy to just manage everything at the same time.
I can't even manage my breakfast, let alone my monthly schedule.
Yeah. I say schedule.
I say schedule.
Oh, okay.
And it's not just me.
It's millions of people.
There's loads of us.
Okay.
Who say that?
The scheduled people. Okay.
Schedule. Yeah. That's that's a British thing.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later, but I never know which pronunciation to use.
Really?
Yeah.
But you say, do you say schedule?
Yeah, it's a schedule.
Okay. I think you're in the majority.
Okay.
I think that most people say schedule.
Okay.
Even though it is American, Fred.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh.
But see, I write organized with an S.
Okay.
But I say schedule, so.
Yeah, get some.
Exactly.
Consistent, for goodness sake.
I just can't.
I don't think it matters that much, really, does it? No.
As long as people understand you. I mean, that's what language is for.
Yeah.
To communicate, not to be right.
I mean, if for example, I had a conversation with you, and you said, I'll check my schedule and then I'll write you an email. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, fine. He's going to check his schedule. And he said schedule, but I'll let him get away with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's going to write me an email or write an email to me. And then in the email, you spell organization with an S. I'll be fine with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go, what the... What's he talking about? He said schedule, and now he's writing organized with an S.
You're not going to send me a fiery email.
Yeah, like, dear Fred, you're fired. Good day. Please be more consistent with your spelling and pronunciation.
Okay. No,
I don't think it matters that much, really.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, we're going to come on to that in a bit. All right. Mm. So... so many things to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do the stand-up and stuff now, mm-hmm. and I've seen you on stage recently. You're very funny. You're a very funny man.
Thank you.
What do you talk about on stage?
What do I talk about on stage? I talk about me a lot.
Yeah.
Or some experiences through my filter, basically, or through my prism, in a way. So I talk about...
What's your filter?
I don't know, like my personality,
right.
Basically. I think it's interesting for me to write about stuff I see, the way I see it, And so talk about my experience about living in Paris and moving to a different country and the cultural differences you can find here, or ethnicities and stuff, because I'm a black person.
I had noticed.
It doesn't show in the podcast, I hope. Oh my God.
He's black, everyone.
Like being black or being from Africa or being from Cameroon or coming to study in a different country and meeting people in a different context. And also about silly things sometimes, about people's habits in France or people's... how people's habits differ between France and Cameroon, for example. Uh-huh. Or I'm writing a joke about spoons right now.
Spoons?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, can we hear it? Can we hear the spoon joke?
I'm not good at out of context.
No, of course.
You know,
you can just tell us about it. You don't have to tell us the joke itself.
Yeah, it's basically about how it's about the life of a tablespoon. Uh-huh. And I think it's because it's something people use a lot for very common things without appreciating it enough, I think. I think there's not enough appreciation for tablespoons in the world. So I'm kind of like trying to make that right.
It's a sad story.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it ends up in like marital trouble and stuff.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Most of my jokes end up in sadness or death or something terrible happening to people. Yeah.
The spoon ends up in marital trouble.
Yeah.
What, the spoon gets married?
No, the spoon is married, but doesn't get enough respect from the family. So,
what's the spoon married to?
I've been asked that question before, and I was talking about it with another comedian, you know, Lara.
I do,
and we started thinking about that whole being married to a fork and gender things, and
because I would imagine the fork would always want to be married to a knife, knife and fork, right? They always go together.
Yeah, so spoon and spoon.
Spoons get married. Spoons just don't get married.
Maybe God!
Maybe they get civil married.
And then you get in a whole debate about, you know, what is the meaning of marriage?
Yeah,
and
do spoons have the right to get married?
They should,
because
I think they should.
If the spoons start getting married, then the knives and forks will get upset.
Yeah, exactly, and they'll march in the street against spoon marriage. Oh my God, that will be awkward. It's very awkward.
I know. It would be terrible, wouldn't it? The knives and forks all arming up against the spoon.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. But spoons are just so useful, though.
They are.
Yeah, they are.
Very.
And they're appreciated.
Okay.
Anyway.
I can't wait to hear the full story when it finally comes out.
Please. You'll probably hear it soon.
I look forward to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever used a spork?
No, but I know I've rediscovered it recently, but I don't think I've ever had... I think you just quickly move from spoon to fork when your parents start trusting you.
Right.
But I don't think I've ever used a spork.
I think the idea is that someone thought, look, three items of cutlery is too many. We need to combine them.
Yeah, yeah.
At least two of them.
It's a smart idea.
Yeah, it's a pretty good idea. So anyway, that just shows, doesn't it, that the spoon and the fork do go together
exactly
to an extent. I think the spoon and the knife, that marriage wouldn't work. Because either either you have a spoon or a knife. It's a spoon and a fork or a knife and a fork, right?
Yeah.
Chopsticks.
Ah, another, a whole other debate.
That's right. Because you can do chopsticks and spoon.
Yes.
They do that in some countries, in Thailand.
It works very well.
Yeah, they often have a spoon and some chopsticks.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's just
for the noodle and the soup, for example, if you have a pho. Exactly.
Exactly. If you've got, like a noodle soup, you can use the spoon to eat the soup and the chopsticks to eat the... Maybe the chopsticks are going to come in and save the spoon in your story. I don't know, but we'll wait and see.
Okay.
You talk about silly stuff like spoons, stories and things.
That
which
as
is,
well.
Which is cool. You also talked about sort of cultural differences, like, you know, for example, difference between Cameroon and France.
Yeah.
So you moved here to go to university in 2010.
Yes.
And so up until that point, you'd basically grown up in Cameroon.
Yeah, all my life in Cameroon.
Right.
Before that.
Okay, so what was it like then moving from Cameroon to France?
To be fair, for me, it was okay. It was okay because I think it was a strange situation because I moved to a campus, you know, so it was in a sort of bubble.
a university campus.
Yeah, exactly. So I wasn't in the city or anything. I was just in school all the time, and I was in that very, I mean, closed world, because it's a campus, you know, and you're far from everything, and just go to class, and then you have all the stuff happening on the campus, whatever, sports and music and all the clubs, different type of clubs. So I didn't really jump into the Parisian life as some people might do when they get here. I came to that later, so my experience is much more of a mix. It's never completely easy to move to a completely different country.
Yeah.
It was a little rough at times, but I think it worked out okay, because you just try to recreate a sense of community with some people. I did find some people to recreate that sense of community with.
You mean sort of fellow Cameroonians?
No, because I was the only one in my class, so there was no option for that at the time. I mean, I have some family here that I'm still connected with, and that they welcome me here. And so I came here with my dad. Actually, my dad came with me when I came here, and I have some cousins living in France. So at the time, I had some family. I still have them. So I still have the family.
You didn't get rid of them.
I didn't abdicate on the family.
Or you didn't go be like, I can be the only one.
Exactly.
I'll be the only one in France. Get out.
I didn't Highlander my family. That would have been horrible.
There can be only one. Iyango.
Steal
in
their
France.
Powers.
So
I have to. So when I got here, I wasn't completely lost. I was the only one. Mm. But also on campus, I was the only Cameroonian in my class. I had some other Cameroonians on campus, three, I think, but they were in different classes. They were in their last year, so we were not really classmates or anything. Yeah.
About the kind of group of like-minded people that you got together with, that was probably the people you did the comedy show with and the musical. Is that right?
Yeah, not at first, because I did the musical during my last year. I know it was just other, mostly foreigners. Actually, just a whole bunch of crazy people I just agreed with on most subjects.
Right.
Because also you have in my school, because you have different ways to get in. You have the class, what is considered the classic way for French people, which is you go to a prépa, or which is a special boarding, 2 year boarding, 2 or 3 year boarding school after they get out of high school. So they get prepared specifically for all the big, to get into the big schools, and then they get there, and they get there in what they call L3, which is the last year of the bachelor, basically, in terms of equivalency.
Yeah, yeah.
And so other people like me, international students or other French students that didn't go through the prépa boarding schools, they get in during the master year. Mm-hmm. So you also have that kind of difference between the real people and then the other people.
Oh, I see.
So yeah, there could also be some tension about that.
Because some of the students probably felt like, we're the real students who studied to get here, and you're the ones who were given a scholarship or something.
Yeah, exactly. You get in the easy way. You only had 3 years of regular school, you know. It's okay, fine.
Right. Whatever. I see. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And so... I mean, I don't really know anything about Cameroon. I mean, I sort of know where it is. You say in your stand-up, have a joke about that.
Yeah, exactly. About
the location of Cameroon. But I don't know if you want to repeat it on the...
Yeah, Cameroon is in Central Africa. It's, as another comedian said, it's in the armpit of Africa. So, you know, there's on the west side is that right angle, if you broadly see the shape of Africa.
Yeah.
Exactly, it's at the right angle.
So there's that kind of inward corner on the west side.
Exactly.
There's the large part that sticks out on the side, which is where you get
Senegal and Gambia, Mauritania. So
coming all the way down from Algeria on the west side, all the way down to that large, and then it kind of comes in.
Exactly.
And there's a corner there.
And we're right at the corner.
And Cameroon's right in the corner.
Exactly.
In the armpit.
The armpit of Africa.
The armpit of Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard it referred to as the hinge of Africa.
The hinge of Africa. Oh, I didn't know that one. Okay.
I don't know if my listeners are all familiar with the word hinge.
Yeah, like on a door.
Like on a door.
The thing that squeaks. Exactly.
Exactly. The part of the door that squeaks, it's that part that sort of allows the whole door to open and close.
Yeah, the link between the door and the wall.
Right. Yeah, the link between the door and the wall is the hinge. I've heard it referred to as the hinge of Africa because it's sort of like, is the point at which, I guess, I don't know. The metaphor turns. Yeah, the metaphor doesn't work. The metaphor doesn't work because it's not like the whole of Africa is turning around.
Exactly.
You know, it's all static in one position. But Cameroon borders a number of other countries in that area.
It borders Nigeria, Chad, Central African Republic, Gabon. Am I forgetting something?
You might be.
I might be.
Don't worry. No one else is going to know better than
Congo.
You. Congo as well.
Yeah, I think that's it. Okay. Yeah. So, what can I tell you about Cameroon? It's an interesting country. Well, one of the classic facts is that it's one of the only country which has French and English at the national languages.
Because many of the African countries can pretty much be divided into like English speaking and French speaking.
Yeah, like roughly. You can have exactly. So we are in the mainly the French. The formerly French colonized section. But what happened is that we are right at the edge of the English part, which is, not actually. At least in that part, there's Nigeria, and that was English. So what happened was that we were originally visited, let's say, by the German people.
Visited.
Exactly. For a long stay by the
Did they stay a bit too long?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there was the original were colonized by German people.
Uh-huh.
But they lost the First World War. So in 1919, after the Versailles Treaty and all that, all the German colonies were taken back by other people, including French and English. But because we were at a strategic corner, we were divided between French and English people.
I see.
So roughly 70% of Cameroon is French. So the, what's that, east side, like center east.
Mm-hmm.
And the western part was for the UK.
Like the part that was bordering Nigeria.
Exactly.
Is English speaking.
Exactly.
So it's mostly French speaking and partially English speaking too.
Like the two big cities are in the French part of the country. And there's like 30% that are English speaking.
I see.
Exactly.
So which part are you from?
French speaking.
Okay.
Yes.
I see. So is French the official language?
Both are the official languages, like Canada. Uh-huh. I think that's the one thing in common with Canada.
Right. And the fact that you're next to Canada in the alphabetical list.
Exactly. Yeah. What a coincidence. I think there's... No. I was about to say Cambodia, but that's before Cameroon. I think maybe, right after Cameroon, there might be Canada.
Right, I think so.
Yeah, so that's the story. So I'm from the French part of the country, so my first language is actually French. But the advantage is that you can get English everywhere.
Do most people speaking in the French part, the largest part, do most of them speak like good English? What do you think?
I don't know. Well, it's... Like, it's a complicated issue, but like right now, it happened quite recently. There's always been a kind of tension between the English part and the French speaking part, because the let's say the whole government system of Cameroon is in the French part, mostly. So the capital city and everything. So you're and also most of the country is also French speaking. So you're bound to have some discrepancies between both parts. And I think right now the people in the English-speaking part feel like they're a little left out. So there's some problems right now. Like the internet has been cut out.
Seriously?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's still going on as we speak, but it's a thing that happened at least.
Wait a minute. The internet's been cut out in what, the whole of the country or just the English?
No, the English-speaking part.
The English-speaking part's got no internet.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know all the details, but I know that at least in some parts of the English-speaking country, the English-speaking Cameroon, like, because there's been some protests and everything, and there was some, like, police violence and everything. It was quite rough, and
it sounds a little unstable. The English speaking part were protesting about something, probably a lack of representation.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you know, like having French speaking teachers coming to, for example, English speaking schools to teach like in French or in English and stuff like that. Okay. It's like, can we just have some representation in the system? And now there are people, you know, asking for just like going back to a federal state as it was in the 60s, or just like, you know, going away. But I don't think, you know, I mean,
the usual struggle for representation in the system, and the usual struggle of like, you know, a majority culture sort of dominating the minority culture. And so the English speaking part sort of protested against these problems, and the government switched off their internet as
basically.
Really?
Yeah. It's a classic controlling the ways of communication, you know. It's like, you know, if they can't scream, if you can't hear them scream, they might as well not be screaming. So it's pretty weird. I mean, I'm not the most political person. No. Like, I'm not really into politics, but it's just something that's so big that I can't avoid.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I can't talk about it and pretend it's not happening. No, basically,
absolutely, yeah,
yeah. So it's but yeah, there are people that are much more into that and much more
activated about politics.
Yeah, people know more and can say more about it than I do. But have to mention it.
That's not why I brought you onto the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't. I think at the time we talked about me coming here, it wasn't happening. So it's quite recent. So But it was in the back of my mind because I knew we were talking about that.
To be honest, you're the only Cameroonian person I've ever had on this podcast, and so. You know, don't worry, we don't expect you to be some sort of expert in the political situation there. But any sort of any anecdotal evidence is always good.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was such tension and that measure had been taken. Yeah. That seems pretty extreme.
Yeah, but I think from living in the French part, is that something you really see? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's an issue that's quite far from you.
Yeah,
and then now there's that, it's coming back. You know, there's been tension before, but I think when I was living there, it was not as hot as it is right now. And for some years, it hasn't been. But I think it's just like, you know, if you don't fix the problems, it just keeps coming back.
Right,
basically.
I see. I'm just trying to imagine an equivalent in the UK. It's a bit like if Scotland started campaigning for another independence referendum,
exactly,
and the Parliament in Westminster just shut off Scotland's internet.
Exactly. That would be very strange. Yeah. But I saw that Edward Snowden tweeted about that.
Did he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's quite weird for a government to just like...
Yes.
Switch off the internet.
Especially today when internet is fast becoming a basic right.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a basic utility. I mean, people are using it for business, you know, so...
Yeah.
Businesses are getting affected at the same time. It's like, hey.
It's essentially like throwing the country straight back into the early 90s. And, you know, to be fair.
For Cameroon, maybe the early 2000s.
really?
Yeah, well, a little delay, obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to know more about Cameroon and what it's like there. Mm-hmm. I've never been.
Yeah, it's, apart from the other thing, I mean, it's a nice country to be fair. I like my country. It's fun. What is it interesting? Because of the geographic situation, you have a big mix of landscapes.
Right.
You have in the north, it's more of a savanna, so it's like drier, and you have closer to the desert parts. You have like the big equatorial forests. You have the Atlantic. You have the mountains in the west. Actually, you have like volcanoes, exactly, and so it's quite interesting. Yeah,
don't you have an exploding lake? In
oh
Cameroon.
Yeah, we had oh yeah, that one. That's a throwback to the 90s again. I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah,
it's not really that funny, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It's not actually that funny.
When
but
you think about it, it's a very serious, environmental thing. But there is a lake which periodically explodes. It's just,
I mean, when you say it like that, it sounds like kind of this fire bursting from the lake. It's not exactly that. It's like pockets of gas getting released from the lake, basically. So that area is like... I think you can't leave it there now.
Yeah.
But they're trying to rehabilitate somehow, but it's quite complicated. So, I think in the 90s, it was like an incident with the region around the lake because I think people didn't know or people had forgotten. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think, there was an incident due to the gas. We have some, like, a lot of underground activity yeah. in Cameron, in those regions. Yeah,
so exactly. I think there's a fault line that's in that area where there's...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so a massive diversity in terms of like the geography.
Yeah, what else? The language as well.
Yeah.
We have the French and English as national languages, but we have more than 200 languages spoken in Cameroon. Yeah,
are they distinctly different languages?
Yeah. Wow. 200 and I mean, of course, you have language families, but you have in those families you have distinct languages. So in total, you have like 280 languages.
And
in
these
Cameroon.
Are like tribal languages, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, we don't have like, for example, like you have like Swahili, for example, which is like another, or Zulu, which are very big languages in the region. No, we have like all these little languages that are just like being kept alive somehow in all that diversity. Amazing. That's also quite interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Do you speak any of those languages?
No, sadly no. Because I'm from like, in the later generations, it's because it's the school system. So you go there and you learn French. So it's the use for those other languages is not as common anymore, I think. So I think it happens with a lot of languages around the world where you just have this kind of globalization that's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, my parents, for example, didn't teach me any of the languages. I know maybe like the very basic stuff like hello and tomorrow, but you know,
two main words that you need.
Exactly. What else do you need to survive in a country?
Yeah. Hello. Hello. tomorrow.
So yeah, I didn't learn any of the other languages. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, but you grew up with French, and you learned French, you know, in childhood and all that stuff. That's your first language.
Exactly.
How did you get your English up to the level that it is now? If English is a second language, right?
Yeah, for me.
So tell me about English. How did you manage to get your English to the level that it is right now?
So as I said, because English is also an official language, you get English lessons in school. So I started learning English when I was 4.
Do you remember what the lessons were like? Sorry.
When you're a kid, you really start with the most basic I am, you are, he is, the days of the week, the from 1 to 10.
Hello, you know, tomorrow.
Hello, tomorrow. that's how they welcome you. First English lesson, hello, tomorrow,
right?
And you don't know what they mean, but yeah, that's how you start.
Yeah,
and then gradually you start getting into grammar, verbs, tenses, and then the more vocabulary. You get thematic lessons. Mm-hmm. You get to learn about all the coulda, woulda, shoulda, etc. All okay. those. How do you call those?
Modal,
right?
Modal verbs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Modal verbs. Yeah. As you grow up, it gets more and more complicated, and at one level, you start to work on your pronunciation a little bit, you know, not to sound too much like having a French accent, for example. Like, it's something you can do. But also, because of there's some opportunities to learn English a little more if you want. Yeah. So there was, for example, the British Council I told you about.
Oh, really?
We have a British Council.
Well, we're everywhere, aren't we?
Exactly. I mean, it's a great name. Such a posh, just high standard name, British Council. It sounds great. They have a British Council or another institution which is called the Pilot Center. Uh-huh. Where you can also go and learn English. So you have all these institutions where, you know, if you want, you can get your English even better. Mm. And I think that now, because also people are just looking outwards a little more and just getting the learning about the interest of learning a second language, more and more people are doing that. I think that in my generation, for example, more people speak good English than before. Okay. Because before it was very French-centered in terms of, I mean, living, and also I think even when you're thinking, oh, if I travel, I'm going to go to France, for example. So more people staying in the French thing. Mm-hmm. But now I think it's just seen as a skill. You just have, you know, so people learn more English now, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Do most people of your generation speak English like you?
Or
is your English a bit better than everyone else's?
I think on average it may be a little bit better because I had to have classes in English. So I had my degree in English, for example.
Ah, right.
So I think it's just a level of immersion that you don't necessarily have. Okay. Like, I will say that, like, in my generation, most people speak good English and can work in English, but don't necessarily live in English, which is something I did a little more, maybe. Yeah.
And what about accents? If I went to Cameroon and hung around with some people, yeah, would they all speak with a French accent?
No, it's a mix. I think there is. I think you will get more of, I think, a pidgin accent,
uh-huh,
which is something you get closer to the Nigerian accent, maybe. Okay. I think you must have heard it,
yeah,
being from the UK. Yeah,
yeah.
Something closer to the Nigerian accent. I'm terrible at doing accents, so I can't even try.
You can't do it?
No. I'm not good at accents. But it's something where, yeah, you have closer to the accent, because even when people learn English, they sometimes learn English from people with an accent closer to pidgin. Like a mix between British and pidgin.
Pidgin.
Yeah, exactly.
You might have to explain that one.
So pidgin is basically a word that's used to designate like mixed languages, mm-hmm, you know, where you have basically something that happens when English is introduced in a country and it's modified by the people acquiring English. So it's not exactly English, but it's a mix between English and other languages, and it's kind of a hybrid language.
Yeah.
So that's what the word pidgin means.
Yeah, and it's sometimes used a little pejoratively.
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe in some context it's pejorative, but that's how...
It's not always pejorative.
Yeah, and it's where I'm from, it's not... I don't think it's...
I mean,
No. People say they speak pidgin English.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily negative sounding, yeah, but sometimes it's used in a negative.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's used to say you don't speak English properly.
Right.
Yeah. But no, in this context, it's just, I think it's just to say, yeah, that's
like kind of hybrid.
Yeah.
And I guess you could say it's a bit of a simplified version, but I mean, yeah, obviously your English is native like. So what makes the difference? I mean, you talked about the institutions that are available, mm-hmm, for everyone.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think often, mm-hmm, getting a language to a good level is a personal thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
What about you as an individual do you think made you different? I mean, what have you done yourself, yeah, to push your English?
I think that you have to find the right method for you. What's going to work for me if I really want to improve my English? I think me, it was a mix of lessons and also, as I say, just the principle of immersion.
Mm-hmm.
Even before I got to France, which is ironically when my English got much better.
Really?
Yeah, because of my school. Well, because in school, basically I was in an international program, which was mostly taught in English, and then my last year was exclusively in English.
Here in France?
Yeah, exactly.
So it was all in English?
In my business school, exactly.
Okay.
So I was hanging out with all types of people from all over the world, and you just end up speaking in English because it's just, you know, the most common thing. You know, when you meet like a Russian guy, a German guy, someone from Tunisia, and a Cameroon guy, well, sometimes you just end up speaking English.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a requirement anyway when I was passing my test to get into school to have like a good level of English. So before coming to France, I was already starting to just get used to, you know, the sound of English, listening to a lot of stuff in English, reading, writing. It's just like inserting English in your everyday routine and trying to make it seem as, I don't know, not make it, it doesn't have to be a chore, but just something you can integrate naturally in your routine. So,
What exactly were you listening to then?
Yeah. At the time, I was listening to... I had some training CDs. Just for my test, I had some training CDs, like listening to conversations, mm-hmm, listening to some texts. You can have some things where, for example, you have the transcript of a text. So the text written out and then the audio version. So it's good. So because you can track the words, and then when you have some trouble, you can go back to listen to,
yeah,
to some things.
Yeah.
At the time, I was watching some TV shows and movies, and I was getting a lot into cinema. So it was also easy to watch a movie with subtitles. That's something that helped me a lot, because you also not only you get like the you enjoy it, so it's easier to watch, mm-hmm, and you also get a lot of accents. you get a lot of situations where people speak English. You can have people speaking very loudly or very low, and then, you know, in situation of whatever, violence, and then calm, and then comedy and different context. So adding context to basically the English language lessons, in a way, is something that helped me. And you just end up learning more and more words, vocabulary. I think vocabulary is the toughest part, because I think in terms of grammar, if only because I've been learning since I was 4, it was easier.
Yes.
For me, at least.
Yes.
So I think I had the basics acquired. Mm-hmm. But to speak it really, you just have to get into the head of someone who speaks English. Like, what am I going to have to do? And just, like, put yourself in different situations. And eventually, you just get used to it.
It's just a natural process.
Yeah, exactly.
To an extent. But yeah. I'm quite curious about some of the sort of specific active things you did, because we can all just kind of introduce more of the language into our daily lives.
Yeah.
And you know, we're constantly hearing advice about, you know, just watch films in with the subtitles on and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you were talking about those training CDs that you listen to, and you have the transcript, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So did you actually have a pen in your hand? Were you going into the transcript and sort of writing? Yeah?
Yes.
What active stuff were you doing beyond just listening, just for enjoyment? What were some of the more applied things you were doing?
Active stuff?
Yeah. Were you writing things down in a notebook and things like that?
For example, I will track a lot of the new vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I was started reading books in English, so it was an exercise in expanding my vocabulary. So I will make sure to track all the new words, for example, and be sure to either repeat them or try to use them in different contexts, or, you know, have a little bit of writing where I can use them, just to cement them in my memory in a way.
So tracking, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like tracking new words.
Yeah.
So I always sort of say it as noticing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you could say tracking as well, like a tracking device. I mean, it's the same kind of idea,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Well, for example, if I was, for example, reading a science paper in English, and I discovered a new word, I will have the word and maybe do a little research around the words. So that just having that word associated to maybe a memory of looking for something, and basically having a context around that word, so that when I saw the word again, I was like, oh, this is what it means compared to that and that and that. To be fair, it's something I still do today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still use that. When I see a word, usually I know it's quite difficult to only have the definition and just remember it, because I mean that I don't. If you just translate it in French and then try to remember it, it's quite hard, because the next time you see it, it's just gonna be gone again. So I always try to, for example, read some sentences with a word in it, just to give it some context. So like try to just, as I say, if it's something I can like look for in Wikipedia or something, I just like look for it. If it's like a concept, for example, I try to look for it on Wikipedia to maybe understand a little more and not only apply a meaning to it.
Like to fully contextualize that word. You probably see the word being used in various sentences.
Yeah, exactly.
And you understand the whole thing around it, not just some quick definition of the word. I sometimes think of it like it's a sort of neurological set of connections.
Exactly.
I think it almost is, in a way, that when you remember a word, it is about making, I don't know, but it feels like a good analogy, but I don't know if there's actually any basis in like neuroscience or whatever, but it feels like a good analogy. That imagine a word, if you write a word down on paper, it's always good to create like these mind maps.
Yeah, exactly.
Where there are all these connections to other words that you already know, and you create, the more connections you have between that word and other existing words, the stronger it will be in your mind, and the more likely you will be to actually remember it and then use it properly. So what you do by, when you find a new word, by like reading around it and exploring the word, you're creating more and more sort of memory pathways to other existing things that you've got in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. And as you say, it's about a word doesn't live on its own. A word, it's designed to be used with other words. And it's also about precision when you speak. I think it's a good way to assess someone's level, you know, because you, especially I think in English, because it's because of its structure, you can use the verbs be and have basically everywhere if you want to. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good exercise to go past that and try to have more active verbs to use to put in place of be and have, and just have the exercise of failing a little bit in a way.
Failing a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's good when you learn language to fail a little bit, because there's always this awkward part where you're not sure what you're about to say or something, and you try to use the words and not exactly the word, but you know, you thought you had the meaning right, but not exactly. So, you know, I think it's good to like have some pack in more and more words and try to take some chances.
Push the boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And
eventually you just get to that stage where you're as comfortable. Well, you'll never be exactly as comfortable as you are in your native language, unless you're like some of these people that are lucky enough to have like two native languages.
Right. Paul Taylor, basically. Although he doesn't know any words in English, so it's not to worry about, as we've established on this podcast. I'm just joking, of course. He's brilliant.
I'm not going to get into that beef.
No, don't go there. Mm-hmm. No.
A classic LEP feud.
Oh, yes. It's a long-running feud there about Paul's knowledge of vocabulary in English and his general ability to win any game
on
this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to take sides. This is my first time. I don't think I'm going to...
No, you don't have to take sides, Fred. Don't worry. We're not... you're not expected to do that.
Exactly.
All right. It's very interesting. Like, you know, sort of like looking at how you've done this. Then, what about your accent? I've heard you say before on stage, that you don't know what your accent is. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. But well, as I told you, it's a mix. I think I don't know where that one came from.
I don't know what between is.
Exactly. it's a mix between, I think, French, British English, American English, and Pidgin English.
Yeah.
Because of just all the influences I had. Most people relate it to American accent.
Definitely.
It's closer to American accent.
I would say so, yeah.
It slips sometimes. Sometimes it's some words are just not the way an American will say them.
But generally, Fred, I mean, I would say that you've got you're much more American sounding than anything else.
Yeah, that's true. It's just a function of environment and the fact that I actually learned a lot of English through movies and comedy.
Yeah.
So, and that's very American influenced. So eventually, I just got that part. Originally, I think my first. Awesome. One of the best teachers I ever had in English had a very British accent.
Really?
It was in first grade, actually. In the, how do you say, middle school, is it?
Yeah, middle school. Yeah, when you were about,
not first grade, I'm saying sixth grade.
Sixth grade, that's American. English version, how old is that?
Well, I wasn't the right age.
So we get back to numbers again.
I think technically you have to be like around 11.
Okay. Yeah, that's like the end of primary school, the beginning of secondary school.
Secondary school, exactly. Okay. But he used to say to tell us that you don't say they, you said they.
What?
He had a weird way to pronounce words, and he used to say
they.
They. He tried to like give us like the... It was closer to British, but also like some version of it. And he used to say, you don't say women, you say women.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's plural. One woman, two women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was very much accentuated. It was really women. It sounded awkward to me, but I always remembered it. But no, my first teachers were really much into British English.
Okay.
And gradually... I moved to American English.
I see, because of the stuff you were listening to, and
because again, like when I was in school, it was just like American English.
Right.
Most of the time, yeah.
Okay. What a pity, Fred, that you've you moved away from...
I think you went
to the dark side, basically.
I can feel kind of fake a British accent, but it just it sounds weird. It sounds weird.
Can you do some for us?
Can I do some for you? For you?
Yeah, that's quite
a little
good.
Like that. Like that?
Like that? Yeah, like that.
Like that?
Again... In the UK, there are so many different accents that...
Exactly. If I try a British accent like this, it's going to sound weird because even more words not sounding right. So, no. So I'm going to go back to this.
Okay. Well, it is interesting the way the accent sort of becomes the sum of all of the kind of experiences in that language that you've had.
Definitely. And I think it's just something you have to embrace. I'm not trying to have an American or British accent anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you're learning, maybe it can help just in terms of focusing on some things. But now, frankly, when I slip out of, like what I said, between, to be fair, I don't really care in real life.
Sometimes little mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Happen.
As I said, it's just a function of it's not my native language, so I know it's always going to be slightly imperfect.
Yeah.
Imperfect?
Imperfect.
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 Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So I know that's the process of constant learning to improve it, but also the realization that it's never going to be like my French, and that's completely fine, and I don't have to be ashamed by it, you know. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, I think that English is quite an open language, and you know, there is so much diversity in English,
yeah,
that then there's always room for more diversity as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
And that as long as people understand what you're saying, you know, then it doesn't matter if it's a bit of, it sounds a bit American, or if it sounds a bit British, or it sounds like something completely new.
Yeah.
The main thing is that people understand what you're saying. And we every individual has their own unique voice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's called the idiolect.
Idiolect.
That's the particular way in which an individual speaks.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's obviously the accent, but it's also the particular word choices and stuff like that. So, you know, there's room for uniqueness within everyone's English.
I think, like, if I do a British accent, I can do something closer to Paul's than yours.
What, do you think that Paul and I have got different accents?
No, like in terms of voices and there's intonation, as you said, like idiolect. Like if I try to do your voice, it's not gonna work. But if I try to do Paul's voice, it's gonna work better.
What's the difference between my voice and Paul's voice?
I'm not sure. I'm not really good at like accents and impressions and stuff like that. But it's just that I think
that mine's better, basically.
I'm not taking sides. I'm not getting
it. Sorry, it doesn't need to be said. I mean, it's obvious. But so, it's very interesting. Can you? Well, I couldn't do an impression of Paul. I don't think he's. I don't think Paul speaks sort of differently enough from me for me to be able to do an impression of him.
I guess I can do maybe it will be an impression of Paul the character.
Yeah,
angry Paul. You know, one kiss, two kisses, three kisses. Four kisses. How many kisses?
You're right.
You know, it's not. It's maybe real Paul actually maybe sounds different.
Right, him on stage angry and screaming. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yes, definitely. Yeah.
The baguette.
right. Favorite comedians that you listen to in English. That may have influenced your English, but also have inspired you to do comedy. Favorite comedians? Yeah.
So, I think the two big ones are Louis C.K. and Chris Rock. I love everything they do, and I watch everything and listen to everything. And it was part of the building blocks as I was starting stand up. So it's I think it's just something always in the back of my mind. But I'm always trying to find new voices. It's just because I think comedy is something that's so diverse and you can find so many ways to do it. Mm. And it's just always interesting to find new people and to find new ways to approach problems. I think right now I'm listening a lot to Maria Bamford.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good. And she's just that I mean, she went through a lot of in her life because she's bipolar, and she went through a breakdown, and she has this kind of frantic energy, and she's always, and it just rings very true in talking about her mental problems and her problems just dealing with everyday life and being in a relationship and being with friends and just, yeah, like dealing with all your problems when you're bipolar and you know that it's something that's ever going to leave you, basically.
Yeah, yeah. She's amazing, yeah.
And she's amazing.
She does lots of different characters in her stand-up.
A lot of voices, yeah, exactly.
And I love that about doing stand-up, that at any time,
yeah,
it's so free, because at any time you can just go into a character.
Yeah.
You can do a conversation between two people or more
exactly.
on stage, and it's just you. And the audience is able to fill in the blanks.
Yes.
You know, it's just you in front of a black background with a microphone, and you're doing these two different characters having a conversation.
Yeah.
And everyone
exactly.
sort of fills in all the color and all of the everything else, and it works.
If it's done well, people just get it.
Yeah.
People just get that, oh, yeah, he's not him anymore. He's that other person that is impersonating, it's a great way to tell stories as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. And she does that so well because she does often her family members.
Yes, exactly.
So she talks to her mother and
a mother, a sister, exactly. And she, I think she has this very high pitched voice a little bit, and then for her mom, she'll do a very American, very fancy voice.
It's very sort of patronizing.
Exactly. Maria, did you do this and that? And then, oh, I don't know, mommy, I did this and that. And then she switches between all these stereotypical voices.
I like to do different voices in my act because my own voice does not command the respect and the attention that I believe I deserve. I go into some fancy shop and say, hi, can I get some help? They'd be like, no, little girl, we're not serving little girls today. But you know, if I went in there and was like,
hi, what's your name? Cindy? Cindy, I need to speak with your manager. Thanks a lot, sweetheart.
Yeah, the stereotypes you apply to what is a well-behaved person supposed to sound like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
I think it's a good thing to do on stage.
Yeah.
To push yourself into different characters and to have conversations between different people.
Yeah.
I think it's always a good thing to do. And you know, one thing I always try to do, but it's difficult, is to, if you set up a situation, for example, I don't know, your spoon situation, first of all, you give the commentary to the audience. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know what the way you do it, but you know, just talk about, you know, it's always the knife and fork that goes together. The spoon's on his own. I always feel sympathetic to the spoon. And then once you've set up that situation, you can have so much fun just acting it out, like sort of demonstrating it by, I'm a lonely spoon and no one wants to sit with me. And then the knife and fork are kind of like, oh, look at this spoon over there. Like, you can kind of play with these different characters.
Yeah, exactly. You can totally do that. I think usually I what I do more than doing voices, I'm trying to do more voices, actually, because in real life I do a lot of voices. Yeah. I'm just trying to like bring it into my act. Yeah. But yeah, I at least modulate the volume.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah, exactly.
You do shout sometimes.
I can be quite loud, but it's something I'm trying to move away from. Not move away from, but do differently.
I think shouting is great, but the thing that I've noticed in comedy is that when you shout, you have to shout off the microphone.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
If you shout into the microphone,
people told me that a lot.
Right.
I think when I started, I was even louder.
Really?
Because I screamed into the microphone. And I think it's just jarring to people.
Oh, yeah. It makes everyone's heads explode.
They're like, laugh, and then, oh, my God, what happened?
You know, like the whole place has exploded. So if you do the shouting thing, you've got to shout like that. Yeah. And it has the effect of simulating mm-hmm. the noise mm-hmm. because, you know, you can hear the voices raised like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's something funny about someone shouting off a microphone and then speaking like this again. What's the, excuse me, sir, can you calm down? I'll calm down when someone speaks to me. I'm speaking to you now, sir. You're not the person. You know, I think there's something funny about that, kind of shouting.
Hello, tomorrow!
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, tomorrow!
No, tomorrow. No! Yeah, that kind of thing. I think there's just the difference in mm-hmm. this kind of calm voice and this kind of very angry voice.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of fun to be had in that.
Yeah.
All right. True. Okay. Have we done everything? Have we dealt with every single thing yet? I mean it, everything in the world. What are you going to do? What are you going to do next?
Next?
Yeah. I mean, not sort of after this. Your life, I mean.
Now I'm just working on some comedy projects and on some job projects.
Yeah.
I'm writing some stuff, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to spend some quality time on comedy because some of it is just like you just sit down in a chair and just you don't do anything. I'm trying to turn into someone that actually uses his time to do something valuable.
Yeah, producing, writing, yeah. writing all the time.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
So I have some projects on the way. Eventually,
really. What kind of projects?
Some little scripts. And also something about I'm trying to do some movie reviews because I tried to do them a little while ago with a friend and then we stopped and now I'm going to do some movie reviews again.
What, sort of online?
Yeah, online reviews, yeah.
Some, YouTube, podcast?
Well, to be fair, for podcasts, I don't have any of the right stuff to do it.
The equipment.
Exactly, equipment, because I'm quite poor. But
yeah, well, you don't have a job because of your visa situation.
Exactly.
Comedy doesn't pay that much, does it?
It you can buy a few tomatoes and parsnips with them. But, mm-hmm. With the money of comedy, but not much more. So, yeah. Most of my time is either comedy of movies or movies. So I'm just trying to, you know, I guess use it / share it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something I think it's quite interesting. I do like. Well, I wore a BBA t-shirt just for you.
I saw you're wearing a Star Wars t-shirt just for me. I appreciate that. Yeah. Very, so, I like the effort. But as I said before, I knew that you were wearing the Star Wars t-shirt before you arrived because I felt it. I felt it in the force. I felt a disturbance.
Exactly.
You saw Rogue One?
I saw Rogue One.
Okay.
I liked it.
Did you?
It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's a one-shot, very fun movie. I think people try to like take it apart, and you know, it's like it's not like the greatest movie ever, or whatever. But I was when it ended, I was a little blown away because it was just like and so fast pace and explosions and things happening and then whatever.
And like Darth Vader. And
oh my God, Darth Vader. Oh yeah, exactly.
All these things happening. But obviously it joins up together with episode 4, doesn't it?
Exactly. That's exciting.
I guess what they're thinking is that people watch it and then as soon as they've finished it, they'll stick on episode 4 and watch that.
Exactly.
Although if they do that, it'll be a bit strange because it connects well, but at the same time, it doesn't connect very well.
Well, visually, it's I think it's going to be like interesting to just like move from 2016 back to 77.
Right.
Yeah.
Like suddenly the picture quality is not quite as good as it was a few minutes before.
Exactly. Oh, this hologram is a little blurry. Exactly.
But also just some of the motivations. Now, are we going to spoil Star Wars here? At this
I don't
point?
Know. Did you spoil it already?
I've already spoiled it completely. But
my feeling about spoilers is that they're not that important. Like, avoid them, obviously, if you can.
Yeah.
But I don't think a good movie can be ruined by spoilers.
Okay. Definitely not Star Wars or Taken.
Yeah. Yeah, he does take her back. That's a spoiler.
That's the name of the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, the movie is that she gets taken.
I think the last line of the movie is Taken Accomplished. You know?
That's right. Taken. Exactly. We told you it was called Taken.
Exactly.
What did you expect?
Taken back. That's why people rewatch movies. They know what's happening. You know, it's
right.
Even though the surprise is part of the enjoyment, but I mean, a really good movie is not really ruined my spoiler.
But some films are based on a plot twist. Like, the whole enjoyment is based on the
then fact they're not that good.
You don't expect something to come.
Then they're not that good.
Well, I suppose so. Yeah. Yeah.
If a movie is only a plot twist, how good is it?
Yeah.
If there's no attachment to the characters or like no interesting story and just was like, oh, it was his father the whole time. Imagine if the whole episode 5 was just his dad. It's the dad.
But
there's so much more.
I don't know. I think that people enjoyed episode 5 because they didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke's guy. I think that the twist was one of the greatest moments.
Yeah, it's a climax, of course. I'm not saying spoil everything. I'm saying if you
can. Yes, you are. Yeah, you say, look, spoil all films. No one enjoys movies until I've enjoyed them.
Exactly. Oh, sorry.
It's okay? Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying, don't go and read. Is okay? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's good.
Sorry, I did something with the mic.
You switched it off for a second.
Exactly. I'm not saying go and read all the spoilers. Why? But if accidentally somewhere you hear a spoiler, don't like tweet to the person like, you ruined my life.
What you're saying, Fred, is that if you spoil the film for someone, they have no right to complain.
Exactly.
They have no right. If you spoil someone's enjoyment of a film, they have no right to be angry with you.
Yeah, exactly. Don't come to me. I'm not. It's not. I didn't do anything. I was just expressing my thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing, you know, some of the stuff that you're going to come up with.
Sure.
I can't wait to see the spoon routine.
Yeah, the spoon routine. Yeah, I tried it once. It worked okay, so I'm going to try it again.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Yeah, you got to give these things a chance.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, I've been working on some of my stuff for bloody ages, and it takes time sometimes for it. Yeah. For me, it takes time to remember it. That's the thing.
Okay.
Like, I can write a whole 10-minute routine of stand up. Like, I've got...
Yeah, that was exciting.
I've got a thing about, you know, Taken that you might have heard. But I've got about 10 minutes on Taken. And whenever I try it, I can only remember about 5 minutes at a time. So it takes me ages to remember the thing.
Yeah.
And then you start to refine it and you start to add bits and you start to learn where the audience falls asleep and where the audience really enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you kind of focus on that those bits. Yeah. And,
did you watch all the Taken movies?
Yeah, I've seen all of them.
Oh, yeah. I think I've... Only the movie I watch entirely is Taken 3. The only ones I watch bits of them here and there, and really? I get it. But the only one I went to the cinema for, because in Cameroon the cinema situation is complicated, so you don't just go out for movies, because we don't have a lot of active cinemas that just show things when they get out.
Yeah.
So it's usually like streaming and downloading it, or on TV when it comes out on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I was here for the other ones. But I went for the Taken 3 movie.
So you started with Taken 3?
Exactly. I mean, I knew about them. I knew that, you know, he had his particular set of skills and all that. I knew about the lion.
I don't know who you are.
Exactly.
All that stuff.
Who you are. Man, can we do an accent? Can you do the accent?
Well, his accent?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's kind of like a Northern Ireland.
Exactly.
Gone to California.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who you are. So it's not R. It's not a R sound. It's I don't know who you are.
R.
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 So R. Not,
R.
He's not a pirate. I don't know who you are.
Patch in the eye.
R. I, legend has it, you've taken me daughter. No, he's not a pirate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say, I don't know who you are. Ah.
I don't know who you are.
That's how I'd say it. But he's from Northern Ireland, so he sort of rounds the R off.
Okay.
I don't know who you are.
Okay, okay.
I don't know what you want.
What you want.
Okay. I know that you have my daughter. Daughter.
Yes. That's him.
If you let her go now, that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of it. So that'll be the end of it.
End of it.
Yeah, not that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, but the end of it.
That'll be the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we could go on.
Yeah, we can go on that, yeah. No, but in Taken 3, nobody gets taken. Did you notice?
Yeah, you're right, aren't you? Yeah, no one actually gets taken. The audience gets taken.
Well.
We get taken for a ride.
for a snooze ride.
Exactly, but, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, yeah.
You haven't seen Taken 1?
Yes, I have. I think I never sat down and watched all of it on one, like in one seating, but I watch all of it.
You saw my
I think maybe in two parts, yeah. But I've seen it.
You saw my stand-up routine. That was enough, probably. You just exactly. absorbed the film through all the different cultural references and things like that.
Exactly. And the memes and everything.
Yeah, Taken 1 is actually a pretty well-put-together film.
Yeah, it is.
I disagree with a lot of the basic assumptions that underline the film, like just kill everyone, it's fine. You know, where are they from? Oh, they're sort of vaguely terroristy type naughty people.
Are they Albanian?
I think they're Albanian.
Yeah.
And so exactly. Go ahead, they're Albanian, just kill them, it's fine. Yeah. You don't need to get a warrant from the police to break into that building.
Exactly.
It's just crazy. It's like some sort of middle-aged American man's fantasy.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he's kind of like, you know,
I'm a badass.
I love my daughter. I love her so much. I'm beyond the law. you know, basically, if you love your daughter that much, then you know the law doesn't apply to you.
Yeah, exactly. You can go to a judge and say that she's my daughter.
Exactly.
What else could have I done but murder all these guys?
Imagine, like, you know, Interpol finally tracked Liam Neeson down.
Yeah, exactly.
The European sort of criminal investigation, they got him and they brought him to court in Brussels or something.
Exactly.
And like, you know. Order in the court. Read the indictment. The indictment is that Liam Neeson, or whatever the character's name was, 17 counts of murder in the first degree, illegal entry, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, torture.
Yeah.
Thank you for reading the
charge. Expired visa, probably.
traveling with an expired visa, illegal recording of telephone conversations.
Yes.
Let me hear the counsel for the defense. Our defense rests, Your Honor, on one single point. He really loves his daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I mean, look. Court case dismissed.
Isn't she cute? Come on. Would he have murdered all this man?
Yeah. I think once you understand the balance of the case, have considered all the facts, it's clear that it's all justified.
Maybe once we have kids of our own, we're gonna see that movie in a completely different light.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Who knows? You know?
Yeah.
Maybe with a baby daughter, we're gonna be like, oh, I get it now.
I get it.
Yeah. I get it.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you think that when we have children at some point, not you and me, I mean, that's impossible.
Yeah.
But,
we're spoons, so we can't.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I have kids one day, maybe, I don't know, I dread to think of the situation where it happens. If that happened to me, how would I use my particular set of skills to get out to rescue her? I'd get them on the phone. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. You should know that I have a very particular set of skills. I can teach you grammar.
I will maybe just write on Facebook a lot.
I'll bore you to death.
I'll
bore you to death with grammar rules.
Exactly. Do you like facts about my country? I have many of them. Release my daughter.
My country borders six other nations.
Exactly.
It's known as the hinge of Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Or the, as they tell us in geography lessons, African miniature, because of all the different savanna, forest, mountains.
Africa in miniature.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
So if you get to Cameroon, you can see all types of landscapes in just one country. Yeah. Mm,
okay. Well, I think that pretty much brings this podcast to a close.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Thanks for taking part.
We did it.
We got there.
Got there.
Yeah. All right, then. Do you have anything else to say to the people of the world? Because this is what I always ask people at the end of the episode. Do you have any? You've got the ears of the of planet Earth and beyond listening to you.
I don't know. Just take care, guys. Just be good to other people. You know, like I know it's tough out there, just with your one life. But from time to time, just look to the left, look to the right. Like, who's there? What's happening to them? And you know, just like check out like what's happening.
Yeah, just look exactly. after each other.
Also, I guess #. Bring back our internet for the people.
Yeah.
That's quite weird, right?
Yes, it is actually. We were laughing about it earlier, but it's pretty serious.
Well, that's how we work. We talk about things and how we to to process is to laugh about them.
Yeah. Fred, I should just also... I haven't done this for a while mm-hmm. with guests I've had on the podcast, but it's a tradition I used to do. I'd just like to present you with this certificate.
Oh, thank you.
There you
thank
go.
You
very much. Just a certificate to show that you've been an attendee on Luke's English podcast, a participant on the podcast.
I'm so happy. It's going to go with my other certificates.
You can put that up on your wall.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't really exist, but don't let that stop you.
No. Never. How? Imaginations is my field.
Exactly, yeah. Let the idea carry you through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is it a magic kind of certificate?
It's a magic certificate.
Can I fly on it, like the magic carpet?
If you like, yeah. If you really think about
the
it.
The carpet. I'm trying accents again. I'm bad at it.
Which accent was that?
I think maybe it was Scottish. Carpet.
And vaguely.
Carpet.
Look at you, got a magic carpet.
No, I've just tried with accents. I'm still trying accents. I'm still bad at them.
Well, it's fun to mess around with them, you know.
I'm doing voices, not accents.
Yeah, characters.
Exactly.
I think that's a good way of thinking about it, because if you try and do an accent, then you're never going to... Like, there is no... You know, there's so much diversity that if I do a Scottish accent, it's never going to be representative of all people in Scotland.
Exactly.
So what I just have to imagine is that I'm drunk and angry. And then the accent comes
and now,
out.
That's representative. Am I right?
No, I don't mean to generalize and say all Scottish people are drunk and angry. Just a lot of them. No, I'm just joking again, of course. But yeah, all right, mate. Yeah, what are you drinking there? Orange juice? You got any vodka in that? No, it's a gross stereotype of a drunken Scottish man.
I know, they don't drink orange juice.
They don't. All right, Fred. Okay. All right. Thanks again for being on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. And I'll see you soon at a comedy show, no doubt.
Yes. See you very soon.
Okay, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, so that was Fred Iango, and I hope you enjoyed listening to our conversation as much as we enjoyed actually having it. What I'd like to do now is just recap some of the things that Fred said about improving your English. So let's go over some of those things again in order to really sort of pin them down. Okay, now I know that what some of you might be thinking, but Fred had English lessons when he was 4 years old. That's cheating. Okay, you might be thinking that because he started and he had some English classes when he was young, that's kind of like cheating, because, you know, many of you listening to this are trying to work on your English in adulthood, only in adulthood, you know, not having spent any time as a child on the language. You might feel like that's cheating or something. I don't know. I don't know what you're thinking, but certainly it helps. We know that it helps to start, you know, early, to start as early as possible. Definitely that helps. But not in every case. In fact, I've met plenty of adults who did take English lessons in childhood, you know, they started early, and yet their English is still not great. So it's not an absolute guarantee. It's not just about starting early. It's also about the way that you apply yourself to your English in adulthood as an ongoing thing. So, you know, it's not just the childhood stuff and the childhood experiences. It's also the other things that you do throughout your life. So let's just, as I said, go over some of the things that Fred mentioned about English and ways to improve your English. So one point was immerse yourself in English content that you really like. The important thing there is that it's content that you really like. In the case of Fred, it's comedy and films. Now, we all know about this. We all know the importance of kind of exposing yourself to lots of English, but it is worth repeating. So there it is again. Get some English into your everyday life and make sure it's content that you're fascinated by. In the case of Fred, it was comedy, stand-up comedy. Second point, notice or track vocabulary as you're listening or reading and go the extra mile. So when I'm talking about noticing vocabulary or tracking vocabulary, as Fred put it. Now, this doesn't just mean watching films with subtitles on, although that is also a very good idea, you know, watching movies with or without subtitles in English. We know, again, that's a good idea. That piece of advice has been said a million times. You know, watch English movies, English language movies with the subtitles on in English. That has been said many times, and it is true. It definitely helps. But, you know, you should try to go the extra mile.
You know, while you're watching, listening, or reading, you should track the language or notice the language while you're consuming it. So make a point of noticing specific bits of English, like vocabulary items, phrases, whatever, and then research that language by investigating it online, by reading around the word, finding more active examples of it using Google or Wikipedia. As Paul Taylor has said on this podcast, just Wikipedia it. And in this case, it is good advice when you're doing self-study. So, you know, find examples of new words and expressions, not just definitions, and read plenty of examples. For example, by using the news tab in Google search results. So if you search for a word or phrase in Google, don't just look at the definitions that you get, but also click the news tab and you'll see news stories that feature that word, okay? Or, of course, by just searching through Wikipedia, and then you explore all of the other associated ideas and expressions around a word or a concept. So you explore it until you've made plenty of connections and associations with that new word, and you know it well enough to start using it. And also, you know, you do have to start using it too, so you need to find ways of not just like looking at a definition or looking at examples, but trying to get the English into your head and then out through your mouth or out through your fingers in the form of writing. So you need to try and produce this new language that you're consuming as well. And that's the way to kind of make the circle complete, as it were. Work with audio and transcripts. So, you know, Fred was talking about these CDs that he had, which had transcripts, and that obviously made a big difference. So work with audio and transcripts. So listen to whatever it is you're listening to, and then check out some words that you don't know by circling or highlighting them in the transcript, and then going the extra mile by researching them, as we just said. For example, if you're looking for a good resource, obviously there's, you know, many of my podcast episodes have transcripts. My other podcast, A Phrasal Verb a Day, all of those episodes have got transcripts as well. But also TED Talks. You probably know about TED.com. Everyone knows about it now. Most TED Talks have transcripts on the TED.com website. So just go to TED.com and sort of browse through all the different talks they have. And they have transcripts. Almost all of them have transcripts. Now, we all watch TED Talks from time to time, but how often are you playing around with the interactive transcripts and really exploring the vocabulary that you can find there? So consider doing that. Go the extra mile by dipping into the transcript and really sort of looking at those words and so on. There are many techniques. I don't have time to go through them all right now because I'm trying not to let this episode get too long. Another point is broaden your range. Broaden your range. That means in terms of the English that you're using. So you need to push yourself to use the language that you're picking up by finding new ways to say the same thing. So avoid just using the simple way. Avoid using the simple verbs like be or have all the time. Now, you know, obviously you've got to bear in mind the importance of effective communication. Sometimes it's best to keep it simple and just use the most simple way to express your idea. Sometimes that's best. But if you're looking at expanding your vocabulary, you need to try and push yourself away from some of the basic stuff that you might be using. Even though that basic stuff is vital, sometimes you've got to try and push yourself away and look for other options that involve slightly more complex ways of doing it. And when you're listening, you know, try to notice the ways in which, you know, other people are using more complex language to say things that could equally be said in a very simple way. So just, you know, look at all the different options and try to broaden your range a bit. Another point is be creative. Write down your ideas. Okay, now Fred is a creative person. He's the sort of guy who's writing things a lot. He's writing comedy sketches. He's writing poetry as well. Now, you could try doing it. There's no reason why you can't try and express your ideas and express your creativity in English. You could write some comedy, some poetry, or some stories if you feel like it. Just find a place where you can share your work, like, for example, a spoken word open mic night or something like that. Or, you know, you could start writing your ideas down in a blog or even just a diary. Even if no one, for example, reads your work, it's good practice to write every day in English just to try and develop your voice in English. Even if no one is reading it, it can be a good idea to just write a lot every day. Another thing is to socialize and be outgoing. So go out and meet people who you can speak English to. Find your own peer group for socializing in English. Step outside your comfort zone and be social in English, and that will help too. Okay, that's it. So go the extra mile and push your English, but do keep enjoying it. Do enjoy it. That's one of the most important things as well. So, in terms of some of the comedians Fred mentioned, I'm not going to talk about them now because there isn't time, because I'm trying to stop this episode getting too long. But you can check the website, check the page for this episode on the website for a selection of videos of the comedians that Fred mentioned with a little bit of text to kind of tell you about them. Okay, also join the mailing list. That's the easiest way to get access to the page for every episode where you can find all that other information. But that's it for this one. Speak to you again very soon on the podcast. But for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humor and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.